The Guinness Six Nations is well underway, and we've already had two cracking rounds of matches.
But there's plenty more to come, and our friends over at Guinness are offering you the opportunity to make this a championship you'll never forget.
You and three friends, if you've got them, could be on the pitch during the iconic national anthem, hopefully for the country you're from. You'll get a dressing room tour. That could be fun. Also, Guinness Six Nations merchandise, drinks vouchers, and, gosh, so much more.
What more?
A free hat.
If there's more, just say it. My English teacher once told me that's what you write when you run out of stuff to say. Anyway, you don't want to miss out. All you have to do is visit guinnessrugbycompetition.com for more details. You have to be 18 or over to enter, of course. Terms and conditions apply. Good luck. And do try to not look too weird when you're on the pitch for the anthems, because you could look a bit out of place, couldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, if you've skipped leg day, wear some tracksuit bottoms.
Big time. Good luck.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. You're listening to the ITV/STV Six Nations podcast with Flats and Shanks.
It's round two of the 2020 Guinness Six Nations. Well, the round's complete, frankly. We're going to talk about it, despite the best efforts of Storm Ciara, or is it Ciara?
Ciara.
Ciara. Okay. We've both been in Edinburgh, haven't we? We've both been in Edinburgh. We're not now. We're in Bath now. What a journey back.
We managed to miss Storm Ciara, you calling it?
Yeah.
We didn't want to risk a flight. Primarily because we thought it'd be cancelled with the high winds. So Flats and I got a taxi back last night at 8:30 via McDonald's for some bottles of water, obviously, and a salad.
Mike Tyndall said on Twitter that he set off from Edinburgh and hit a storm around Birmingham, or the wind was too strong around Birmingham, turned back and went back to Edinburgh. That's brutal. So we got in a...
We don't want to take that risk.
We got in a minicab, basically.
It was a Skoda Octavia.
And it was not comfortable in the back. Sorry to if anyone who works for that brand is listening. It was not particularly comfortable, especially when you're two big fellas. The journey was 7 hours long.
It was more than 7 hours.
Or was it 7.5 hours or something, was it?
7.5 hours long. I managed to sleep a little bit.
You slept for minimum 4 hours of that trip. You keep saying less. It's minimum 4 hours you slept for.
You went through, I think you completed Instagram. Well done.
I reckon I got 40 minutes of light dozing and then that was it. I was awake for the whole thing.
You completed Instagram, you completed Facebook, you completed Tinder, you completed...
Inch.
I think that's a dating app.
eHarmony. Fish,
you completed eHarmony, yeah.
Friends Reunited. What are the other ones?
Face Party. So well done.
I don't know any others.
No, nor do I. MySpace.
Bebo. Done it. It was... At the end of it, I could have never looked at my phone again, except I was awake 3 hours after I got home.
Yeah, you were just... A social media sausage, weren't you?
Absolute sausage, weren't I?
We're a sausage.
You're a sausage. You're an absolute sausage.
But no, we made it. It was a good crack up in Edinburgh. Quite weird that I wasn't in Ireland for the Wales game, but Flats and I did a nice little live show with Jim Hamilton in the Pear Tree Pub, which is a fantastic pub in the middle of Edinburgh. Yeah. Loads of different rooms, really quirky. Will Greenwood was there. We did a little bit for Six Nations TV as well. There was a lady that was on the SAS Who Dares Wins, Esme, and she was sort of doing fitness challenges with Jim Hamilton. Mark Wright was there as well.
She was incredibly fit.
Did Mark Wright bring his missus, wife? No, he didn't. He didn't bring Michelle Keegan.
Oh, is that his?
Yeah.
I've heard her name. I don't know who that is.
You do.
No, I don't.
You do. You're just...
No, I don't.
You're pretending that.
I'm not. Who is she? I know the name. Definitely the name.
I think she was Coronation Street. She's an actress.
Okay. I was going to say she was in Hearsay.
It's Mylene Klass.
She in Hearsay?
Yeah.
Was she?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw Mike Wright outside when we were arriving, he was leaving. Very good looking.
But he's not tall. He's like John Bon Jovi, Tom Cruise. You know, you walk past those two and...
Got a theory on that.
Well,
at school, you're one of the bigger, physically bigger guys. You're generally a sports jock. And if you're not, you often don't want to play with the big boys. So you go and become a creative.
A sports jock?
Yeah. That's what they call people like you in the US.
So American. But it was good fun. I went up on the Friday morning... with Guinness, and James Metcalf looked after me there. Mets.
What's he like though? God.
Good golfer. We tag teamed against Sky and just destroyed him. Played Archerfield. Lovely course. It's not that old. I think it was...
Boring. God.
Around 2006.
God. Boring. Oh, I did do what I did.
And we,
I did CrossFit there.
We dominated. We dominated.
Oh, I did some CrossFit when I got up there.
Stayed in the boathouse there, went for some lovely food. And then
golf.
We did drunken high jump back in the boathouse later on that night.
I saw you doing drunken high jump. Yeah. I've got that on WhatsApp. But yeah. I found a box up there, just hooked up with some CrossFit guys in the CrossFit community and did a wad.
I'd love to believe that was true, but looking at the state of you now in front of me, I know it's not.
I know it's not good. I'm not good at the moment. I'm really strong at the moment, but I'm quite fat. I need to do something, but I just don't know what. I'm not willing to adjust my eating or lifestyle.
There's the problem.
What do I do?
Do you remember the little electropads you could get on your stomach and muscles?
Cristiano Ronaldo?
Yes.
Yep.
Thought about that?
Thought about it. I've got three sets. They don't work.
What about getting a running machine?
I bought a treadmill a few years ago.
Great for hanging clothes on.
I did loads of research into it. Loads. And then moved house. The removals guys took it apart and said, we rebuild it when we get there. Couldn't do it. Lost all the screws. Still in a pile. Years later, Tommy.
Fasting. Try fasting. I know you don't want to change your diet and your lifestyle.
I fast every night. I never eat. In between going to sleep and waking up, I don't eat anything at all. And that's often circa 8 hours. Coming up, Tommy, we're going to speak to Stephen Ferris, former Ireland international.
Mm-hmm.
We're hearing from a crotchety, nuggety, narky Ellis Genge and Alan Wynne-Jones. Course, when we're picking our team of the round for you lot to slag off. Tommy's lost the plot, I can tell you that now. And also telling a few more of the jokes you've left for us very kindly on iTunes. Now, we've mentioned Storm Kiora, and boy oh boy, did she play her part in the Calcutta Cup, Tommy. Goodness me. England edged out Scotland 13-6 in supremely grotty conditions. It was awful. It wasn't unplayable because they played, but it wasn't far off at Murrayfield. I was in the stadium, of course. Shanks had his feet up in front of the telly at a nearby hotel with a six-pack of export and some baccy on his bedside table, indulging in some serious, what would you call it, fair-weather punditry. Let's hear from my match-winning man-crush, Ellis Genge, here venting his spleen to our good pals at STV.
How tough were those conditions?
It's cold, proper cold. Like I said, fingers were freezing, but it's a tight game when you come on those conditions. For a prop, you know what you got to do? Scrum, maul, and pick and go.
Made for you, wasn't it, in that sense?
I just prefer the warm, believe it or not. But yeah, I guess it was a traditional Scotland v England, wasn't it? Nitty gritty, come down to the wire. It was a real good game.
And how important was that result after last week and the criticism the team received?
You know what, I think that's quite a cliche for you lot to say that, because last week we got all the critics came out of the woodwork saying that Eddie should have been sacked, saying that we're not the team that we were at the World Cup. Come on, mate, like, easy for you lot to say that and then come this week and say look at the great performance and the bounce back. Well, not really. Like, we slipped up against a good French side last week, and like I said, I think it's quite easy for media to say that this week. Look at the result, look at the bounce back. We were the same team we were last week, we just played better. Little slip up, so I was quite pissed off, to be honest, to hear all that from the media last week. I don't think it was a reaction or anything like that. We just played the way we should. Didn't play very well last week, end of.
And in terms of how much better this team can get, looking ahead to Ireland now as well?
Yeah, you know we've got loads of growth in us. Loads of growth.
That must be encouraging. Ireland's going to be a big game in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, they're a good team as well. Don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to be a by any means. All I'm saying is that, like, last week it was easy for you lot to say all that sort of stuff, and then this week we win a game and everyone's singing our praises. I don't want to hear that from the media. It's not fair, is it? Because we can't come out and say a bad word about you lot without getting jumped on. So it's just, I think it's quite hypocritical for the media to do that to us.
That's a fair point. I didn't say anything.
I'm not saying you did. I'm generalising the media.
That's fair enough. And I suppose that's part of, sometimes it's part of being England, isn't it?
It's part of the game, yeah. Like, everyone wants to beat England, that classic, do you know what I mean? And we welcome that with open arms. And I'd be disappointed if Ireland didn't want to do the same. And I'm sure they're ready for us as well. But we've got a lot of work to do. We're not the finish article at the moment by any means. And yeah, there's loads of growth in us, which is proper exciting for us.
And is there a lot of growth in the new year as well? Because you're going from strength to strength.
I got told 2 days ago that I was still a breakthrough player. I was surprised they knew my name.
By who?
I won't name names. Okay. I don't think the media was, the interviewer surface. That's just what it is, isn't it? It's sport. Ups and downs. But yeah, I'm always looking to get better. 2 years ago, I wasn't even on the bench. You should take every day as it comes, man.
Now, there's a man that comes across as not really liking the media.
Why'd you say that?
Just by his answers.
Mm.
Bit of niggle in those answers.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, though, when you come on off the bench, score a match-winning try, you're going to have to go in front of the camera. You're going to have to go in front of the microphones. Not too happy with the way the media portrayed England last week.
No.
From what I've seen and what I've looked at from last week to this week, they looked a better team. They did bounce back. I think the questions were fair. Obviously, not too happy with the media in general having a pop at the team, but that's their job. You know, if a team doesn't perform, and when you've got a coach that's saying that you're going to war, that you're going to take teams to a level they've never, ever witnessed before, you're going to show them what a test match is about, and it sort of sets you up a little bit. And when you win, it's great, but when you lose, some of your quotes come back to bite you a little bit. That's what happens, unfortunately, with Eddie Jones, though, because he says what he thinks and because he entertains people. It's a theatre for him, isn't it? When it works, it's amazing and everyone's behind you. But also, he understands, you know, as well as anyone, that when it doesn't go your way and it doesn't happen, then you're there to be shot down.
Yeah, and I think I'm all for players saying what they think after games. Like, go for it. And you know, equally, you and I are the same. You know, we played rugby. We are now part of rugby media. And without fans, there's no pro game. Without players, there's no pro game. Without media, there's no pro game. So we all need one another to varying degrees. But
well, you need me more than I need you.
That's true. Yeah. That is true. Just emotionally, really. But all the media has come out and everyone's saying Eddie Jones should be sacked. I mean, I just didn't see that. I read as much as I possibly can. I listen a lot. Kieran Bracken said he should be replaced.
He's the only one that I've seen from an ex-player to say Eddie Jones needs to be sacked.
Yeah, former pin-up Kieran Bracken. Have you seen him recently?
Looking quite heavy down below.
Yeah.
Thick legs.
Not in the good way.
No. Still likes to wear a pair of Timberland suede yellow boots, which says to me he's a little bit, well, he's not too keen on his height. He's a bit insecure about his height because you wear a Timberland boot, mate, it gives you an extra inch and a half.
Does it?
Yeah.
Whereas I prefer flats. That was an accidental gag. So, you're worried about Brax's fashion. You're worried about him. Okay. Former pin-up Kieran Bracken said that, which is great. Say what you want. But I didn't hear many other people saying that or anyone else saying that. It's like when people say, you know, these referees are biased. At top level, does anyone honestly believe that referees care who wins games? All they care about is making as many correct decisions as possible so they don't get dropped or criticised.
But what I will say is that potentially how you deal with a referee does help in a situation in a game. So if you've got someone that the referee would get along with, for instance, okay, Sam Warburton was really good with ref, brilliant bloke, really nice, had a good rapport with them. Also, you look
this
at
is
some,
quite a tangent we're going off on.
Some of the big ones. Yeah, but my tangents are quite short. And then you've got someone like Johnny Sexton who doesn't quite have that same rapport, you know, can get quite natty and gritty with referees. So I think having a good rapport with referees does help in certain decisions going your way.
Sure, but I mean, my point was that's fine. That's part of it. But the thing is that people convince themselves that certain referees are biased, and it's always different referees, always towards different teams. It makes no sense. To the same end, I think maybe players sometimes convince themselves, or certain fans do, or whatever, that the media, the press, want someone out. And it's like, that just isn't the case. I mean, if you ask, I don't know, Stuart Barnes or Ali Ekin or Schofield, pick Alex Lowe, pick the journalist, some of them might think, I like Eddie as coach, or I'd probably rather have him as coach, just like a punter would. There is no concerted effort to get anyone in or out of anywhere. What we do in the media, on various different media in various different ways, we literally give our opinion on what we've seen. And England were really poor last weekend. This weekend, they were good enough to win an incredibly difficult match. Ellis Genn made a massive difference in that game. They were good enough to win against the Scotland team who looked really good last week. No one was good this week in terms of team performances. England have literally bounced back from defeat with a victory. That is literally what they have done. And it wasn't a great performance because it couldn't be. I don't think that was actually their fault. On the telly, the weather looked bad. That being too patronising, I promise you it's a lot worse than you think it was. It was brutal, absolutely brutal.
The thing with pitches nowadays is that often with rain, you know, on a normal field, the mud will soak up the rain. But the pitches, like the Deso pitches that are used now, which is grass, which is nylon, it becomes unbelievably greasy with just a tiny bit of water. So it makes the conditions even worse. But before we actually have a look at the game and where it was won or lost, a really interesting article has come out today in the Times from an interview with Finn Russell about his relationship with Gregor Townsend. Now, I didn't think any interview was going to come out. I thought both of them would keep quiet. And by Finn Russell coming out, and it's a fascinating interview about his relationship with him. They clearly, clearly don't get on. There's a couple of bits of information there that we weren't quite sure about. You know, not much beer was drunk. You know, it wasn't like he was absolutely hammered in the bar and people tend to go to bed. But when he arrived, there was a senior player committee, and those senior players said, look, they'd agreed that two beers would be able to be drunk during dinner, and that was it. And that was a decision they made on behalf of the team. Finn Russell, part of that leadership group, wasn't there. So when they told him, he wasn't having any of it, carried on drinking, upset people to the point where he had to go to his parents' house and didn't turn up for training the next day. So when you read that article, I'm reading it, I'm thinking, has Finn Russell just thrown his toys out the pram because he's not allowed an extra couple of beers when he feels the right? He should be able to.
Of course, we've only heard one side of it. And I
don't think we'll hear another side.
I think
Greg will stay quiet.
And I think he's right to. Personally, I think it's the more intelligent move to stay quiet in this case. And I love the fact that people like Simon Zebo, who I love following on social media, love to watch play. I love the fact he comes out and says, you know, I got your back, mate, whatever he said, you know, white chocolate, he called him, I think. Also, as a punter, I love watching Finn Russell play as much as anyone else, you know, so met him a couple of times, just in interviews and that sort of stuff, and in a foyer in a hotel in Japan.
Oh, he's brilliant.
Lovely bloke. So he seemed really nice and friendly. Okay, I think what might happen is that a few years from now, Finn Russell might regret this. I think he might regret it because I agree that you don't just have... I've had a coaches before who, and you will have had, Tommy, who that say, this is the personality type I want for this team. This is the behavioural code I want. Everyone fit in with it now. That's fine. If you don't have anyone who's sort of particularly different or much of an individual, that can be fine. I agree with people toeing the line. I agree with people being punctual, wearing the right kit. I agree with all of those standards things. But I think you have to be flexible. However, that goes both ways. And, you know, I played in a Bath team for years with Butch James, who was every bit as talented as Finn Russell, won the World Cup, tons of caps, you know, hell of a player, one of the best players in the world at that point. And he was, the word maverick, I never quite know what it means, but if whatever it means, he was one. Super skillful, did amazing things, also did crazy things, made the odd howling mistake, took someone's head off here or there, but was a genius and we loved him. Probably quite a difficult bloke to coach sometimes because you think, what's Butchie doing? And it comes off half time, it doesn't. We once, the coaches had got together and decided with the skippers, whatever it was, that there was going to be a drinking ban for a couple of weeks leading into a really big game because we partied quite a bit then.
Yeah.
We're not going to go out.
Oh, I know you did.
Yeah, I mean, Butch more than most, or as much as anyone else, but there was and Butch didn't like it. And he said, hang on a minute, guys, we're not going out and getting leathered all the time. We should be free grown-ups. We should be up free to do what we want. We're grown-ups, trust us. You want us to behave like, you know, men at the weekend, trust us during the week to be appropriate. He didn't say it in those words, I'm paraphrasing, but it's basically, I'm a 30-year-old man. What are you doing telling me what I can and can't eat? Trust me to do the right thing. We chatted about that. Basically, the decision was, Butch, everyone respects your opinion, but we disagree. We're going to enforce this. We're asking everyone, we're not going to CCTV you. We're asking everyone to play by the rules. And he says, boys, I've said my piece. No problem. If that's a decision, I stick with it. Didn't touch it. So he said his piece, aired his opinion, didn't work. So this isn't just about the drinks. This is obviously a long-standing thing with Gregor.
No, it is. Yeah, it is. There's a feud that's gone on. He's been coached by him for 8 years. By the sounds of it, they've not once gone on. And there's people and pundits, fans saying, you know, it's all about how you manage players. But there can't be one rule for one person and another for something else. It's not like the senior player group made up this rule of two beers in the evening. And I'm sorry, I just feel that you have to respect that. If you allow someone to break that rule, what's to say they'll break other rules? You know, there has to be rules for everyone.
If you let Finn Russell, I'm not saying he got smashed, but if you let him get smashed on a Sunday night, even though you've all decided that's a bad idea for the squad, then you have to let Rory Sutherland do it. You have to let Fraser Brown, you have to let the young sort of academy type player who's been brought in for experience as a bag holder, the cannon fodder, you've got to let him do it. And that's what I don't like. I like people sacrificing what they want to do for the good of the team. And that can be in a lot of different ways. And of course, we don't know the whole story. My personal view is that there's a couple of games that Scotland could have won in the last 2 weeks. They would have stood a stronger chance of winning them had Finn Russell been on the field. And I think he'll regret not having been there.
And you really hope that they can patch this up because he is a wonderful talent and you want to see him back in a Scotland shirt. But I mean, by the sounds of it and by reading it, it seems that you just got two massive personalities going at it. And neither of them are going to back down.
Tell you what, I mean, I don't know Finn Russell or Gregor Townsend personally. I can't imagine two stronger personalities. Well, let's just say in the same room, Woodward, Delalio, Johnson, Greenwood, Wilkinson, you know, Dawson, right? And they didn't all get on. They just didn't all the time. But they just found a way to work it. And it's a right. I was in meeting rooms. I've never been involved in conversations that brutal that they would have on a Tuesday or Wednesday. They were brutally honest with one another.
Yeah.
the sort of brutal honesty that people think they want in the real world and don't. And every time the meeting or the session ended on good terms, productive terms, everybody moving forward. And if somebody was said, this is what we're doing, this is it, this is how we're doing it, and everyone shouted them down and said why, that person accepted it and it was really healthy.
But that's respect both ways.
It's a shame that it's broken down. It really has.
But let's look at the game. 3-0 half-time, one kick a goal from Owen Farrell. Weather just played a massive factor, huge factor in it.
Yeah, it was everything.
I don't want to be disrespectful by saying this, but it ruined what could have been a great game.
Oh, you know, it was disrespectful. It completely ruined it.
It was one for the purists, and it was quite tight. And, you know, there were a lot of mistakes. Scotland had chances to get back in it. In terms of what I want to see on a rugby field, a little bit more expansive rugby and dry weather. Get a roof. Build a stadium with a roof.
Do you know, it's funny because... And when I say it's funny, I don't mean hilarious.
Okay, sorry.
It's interesting. That's up to you. But people on social media, you flick around last night in the car for 43 days last night. And people saying, I don't care if it was windy. What's a bit of wind? They're professionals. Do you know what? And this is one of those things that you mustn't say as an ex-pro because it's just so condescending and it's really hard for people to like you after you say something like this. But I'm sorry, you are just miles off. You're miles off. But however... I was one of the people thinking it, which is why I feel okay. Because I was commentating with Rory Lawson yesterday and Martin Gillingham. And then for ITV, we're watching it. And Martin Gillingham had said at one point, look at the people's ponchos in that stand. You can see the wind is blowing towards them. Stop kicking it so tight to the touchline. I was like, I know. Willie Hines did it a couple of times. I think Farrell did it. I think Ford did it as well. And it was just, in the end, I honestly couldn't give a toss whether the ball goes into touch or not. I don't care who wins the game. Not even a tiny bit. It's not my job to... cheerlead. It's going back to Ellis Genji's interview. Love Genji, but it is not the job of the media to get behind their national team. That is not how this works. It is our job to critique what we see and be honest and retain some sort of integrity in what we say in terms of our opinion. So we are not cheerleaders. That is not our job. That's the England Rugby PR department. That's not us. So I'm watching it and even I'm getting frustrated. Like, lads, kick it further infield, then it won't get blown out. Of course, it's so easy to sit there and say it.
Well, one man that was sat on the bench and sort of realised, you know, where he needs to kick the ball is Ben Youngs, because when he came on, there was a clear difference in kicking ability. You know, he did kick it far further infield and the wind obviously took it then a little bit closer to the touchline, but he wasn't dicing with the touchline like a couple of times. Willie Hines did. I thought Ben Earl made a big impact when he came on.
Whoa, power.
One moment in the second half where... my heart just sank was when Stuart Hogg nearly fumbles a ball on his own line. Ugh. And I'm thinking, oh no, not another one, please. But he just about gets downward pressure with his upper body, otherwise it was a try. You know, I jinxed him and you jinxed him.
Do you know what? No, just you.
Well, you were in the room, so...
It was just you, actually, but...
You're in.
I was shaking my head when you were doing it, but I was, again, if George Ford had a shocker like that, I'm always just like, please, no. Please, no. Except Johan Hoogje. I don't mind him having a shocker like that. I don't mind him doing it. He stamped on someone's head deliberately, didn't he? And then ran off so he can do one. The rest, I was like, please, no. And I was like, oh my God, he hasn't touched it with his hands. And then I was panicking. It was really odd.
Yeah.
I was like, please don't let it be true.
Because everyone loves Hoggy.
Yeah. But in terms of the impact, you're right. Ben Youngs did really well because he's been at the sort of centre of what people think is wrong with England recently and his performances. I mean, I wouldn't mind getting slagged off in a couple of newspapers if I got 97 caps, to be honest with you. Say what you want. I'll play naked if you want.
Yeah.
I'll play fullback naked for 97 caps. No problem. He did really well when he came on. No, wouldn't I? But Ellis Genge was, different gravy.
Yeah.
Different gravy. Absolute bull.
Can you think of worse conditions than that you ever played in?
I thought about this yesterday. Yes, I've played in worse conditions than that. And it was in that stadium. It was in Murrayfield playing against Edinburgh in the Heineken Cup. A few years ago, my parents, they came to the game. They used to drive up to the game and basically there was so much snow. It was a Sunday. There was so much snow. And for the only time of the season, Bath were like, right, we're going to stay up, lads, and get on it and have a good night. Brilliant. Town got shut down because of the blizzard. So we jumped in the hotel. There was so much snow, they wouldn't let anyone in. They wouldn't let spectators sit in the crowd. It's like, we're going to play in an empty stadium. Yep. There's like staff there.
Well, even if they opened up the stadium, it'd be...
Be empty anyway, but the box, so they used some corporate boxes. So my parents got invited because I said, oh, my parents have driven from Kent, you know.
Yeah.
So they got invited into a corporate box and couldn't see the game from the box. They didn't see any rugby at all. Nicky Little was playing fly half with woolly gloves on.
Woolly gloves.
And he goes, oh, long way from Fiji, bro. He loved it. I actually can't remember who won or lost, but it was awful.
The conditions like that. I can remember playing like really icy conditions where it was only just playable. And it was like in the middle of winter, but you had to wear moldies. That's how hard the ground was.
Studs wouldn't go in.
And I used to hate wearing compression tops. Like, I'd hate anything on my forearms. You know, I'd much just rather wear a rugby shirt. That's it. It was one of the only times I've ever had to wear a compression top. It was that cold. But no, I can't remember playing in windy, rainy conditions where the rain is just going horizontal like that. Sunny conditions used to kill me, mind. I used to hate it.
Oh, yeah, but you'd be skin like burned me by half time, wouldn't you?
I put sun cream all over me and then...
Runs into your eyes. Did it?
Yeah. It would help sometimes just to be able to like wriggle out of tackles because it'd be all greasy.
Yeah.
But nightmare then. When you get it in your eyes, it just stings.
Yeah, nightmare.
Yeah.
What do you reckon of the fans booing?
I didn't like it. Yeah. It's not something that you really associate your rugby with. I hope it doesn't carry on. But there just seems to be, I wouldn't say maybe hatred for some Scottish fans when they're playing England. It's always the big one, isn't it? It's always a big one. And it goes back to Braveheart.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't. But you seem to up your game a lot. It's always the big game, isn't it? France, England, Wales, England, Scotland, England, the Calcutta Cup, obviously, which is a trophy that the two teams play for. So there's a bit more emotion involved, I think, for fans in it. There was a bottle that hit Eddie Jones. It wasn't glass.
No, it was a member of his staff.
Member of his staff, was it?
It was plastic, but there's now second video footage, isn't there?
Yeah.
Secondary footage of it blowing across the top of a bus.
Yeah.
It might not have been thrown. But there was a young kid, I think it was a young kid or a kid or a person giving a rude sign to the England players. I mean, firstly, you know, everyone parents in different ways, but that's bad parenting. I think it was a kid because it was quite a short person, looked like a kid. If I went to a sports match and one of my little girls don't know how to do that, if they ever did or said anything rude to an athlete or whatever, to the star person or the entertainer walking in,
yeah,
they'd be home, mate. They would be home. They would not be watching. How on earth do you let your kids do those sorts of signs to international rugby players on the way in?
Yeah.
Equally, if my dad wasn't watching, I went to watch Newcastle Sheffield Wednesday at St James's Park once. My dad wasn't watching and I was sticking my middle finger up at the opposition fans because they were, I was like 10. I thought it's what you did.
Exactly. Like, you're like Ian Botham, aren't you? That's what I think of your selection policy.
So we've all done it, yeah?
Yeah. Ireland back on song, David, beating my boys 24-14, my boys, that's right, in Dublin, after a stuttering performance against the Scots last week. We'll get through the thoughts of former Ireland back row Stephen Ferris on where the game was won and lost shortly after we've heard from losing captain Alan Wynne-Jones.
Yeah, well, I think we probably gave him an opportunity in the first half. A couple of errors in particular, a couple of rucks, potentially at crucial times. With 30 to go, we felt to go for the corner, 12-point adrift. And we got the one at the end. It was a series of penalties we felt we probably should have got more from, but we didn't.
They were able to apply pressure to you. The pressure built and built. Were you frustrated that you couldn't handle that as the game went on?
I don't think it's that. I think we probably were. We realised we had the environment with us, and they did as well. Hence why they shift from off the kickoff. They didn't want to kick into the wind, and you know sometimes you overthink it. I don't know whether we did that. But they hemmed us in towards the end, like I say, with the environment, it was difficult to get out.
The breakdown in the first half, you clearly had the edge there. As I said, so much to applaud from this. I know defeat is a very, very bitter pill to take, but a lot of positives as well.
Probably, but ultimately it's Test rugby's out winning, isn't it? You can have all the enterprise and all the beauty in the game you like, but ultimately it's about result.
You've got Alan Wynne with Martin Bafel there, talking about how he felt a few decisions went against Wales at key moments. Let's find out if Stephen Ferris agrees. Stevie, thanks for taking this call. It was a great game yesterday, the game of the weekend. The weather dictated a lot of that. Very good performance by Ireland. It meant a lot to them, didn't it?
Yeah, it certainly did. I think, from a fan's perspective last week, walking out of the stadium in Dublin, there seemed to be a lot of negativity, a lot of downbeat Irish fans, considering they got a good result against Scotland. The performance just didn't really... everybody was expecting this new Andy Farrell lease of life and everybody to go out and play this free-flowing style of rugby, and it just didn't really happen for them. But thankfully, yesterday the lads put in a brilliant performance against the current Grand Slam champions of the Six Nations, and I think to a man they were all fantastic, and the atmosphere was certainly a lot better walking out of the stadium.
It feels like kind of a new beginning under Andy Farrell, and kind of not, because it's almost entirely the same faces. And from certain quarters in Ireland, namely sort of Matt Williams, actually, as far as I can ascertain, no one else, there seems to be a huge amount of pressure being put on Andy Farrell to deliver something very vastly different and infinitely successful immediately. Do you feel, as a former international and I guess an Irish fan,
Do you feel excited about what's coming, or do you think there is a steady evolution that's needed?
Yeah, I think a steady evolution is definitely what's needed. You look at the lads that took the pitch yesterday against Wales. I think it was 13 faces in that team that took the pitch against New Zealand in the World Cup quarterfinal and got absolutely battered. So, I think it's going to take time. As a fan, as an Irish fan, I would certainly love to sacrifice. It's difficult to say sacrifice, you know, tournament, sacrifice Six Nations, because I don't think anybody wants that. But I would like to see, I'd like to see Andy Farrell roll the dice a few times, give guys like John Cooney a couple of starts. I would like to see a few more new caps come in and get experience. But at the same time, from a player's point of view and a coaching point of view, you want to try and win the championship. And if Andy Farrell feels that, you know, his best players are still the lads that churned it out against New Zealand in a World Cup quarterfinal, then that's what he has to go with. I think there's two different ways of looking at it. But for me personally, I would love to see him roll the dice a bit more.
Some great performances by some of the Irish players yesterday. I think Andrew Conway probably had his best game in an Irish shirt. Just everything he did was just near perfect. He's really had to force his way as well into this team. How much more is there from Andrew Conway to come?
Yeah, I think quite a bit. I think he's a real poacher. He's always in the right place at the right time, is exactly what you want with your wingers. I think Jacob Stockdale had a pretty decent first half yesterday also. Very, very busy. The three lads in the backfield. I think Johnny Sexton after the game said, you know, when you have those three lads in the backfield, you know, they usually make something happen every time they touch the ball. So, you know, that's really good to hear from your captain. I think Andy Farrell has given them a little bit more of a license, you know, just to go out there and express themselves. If they think it's on, run the ball back. And that's brilliant to see as an Irish fan. So, you know, Andrew Conway, I've watched him in the Pro 14 and in Europe for the last couple of years. He's probably one of the most consistent wingers in world rugby. It's just brilliant to see that he's getting an opportunity on the big stage internationally. And, you know, with Keith Earls out, Keith Earls, you know, he's I played with him in a couple of World Cups, and, you know, he's pushing on a little bit now. He's obviously still world class, but I think Andrew Conway has sort of nudged him out.
Yeah, he's fought his way in, hasn't he, for sure.
And I like watching Conway because he's a bit like Jack Nowlan in a sense that he just seems to, it sounds odd at Test, though, he just seems to try unbelievably hard. And I quite like that. Alan Wynne-Jones, after the game, Steve, said that he felt that some key decisions didn't go Wales's way when it counted. And I'm guessing he's talking about the Hadley Parks try being non-try, being disallowed, and then the scrum penalty that followed that, which felt like a turning point in the game. I'm guessing you're looking at those decisions and disagreeing.
Yeah, of course, I'm disagreeing. I think it's funny that Alan Wynne-Jones come out. He didn't specifically say about the disallowed try, but, you know, Wayne Pivac come out and said afterwards that he thought it wasn't a try. So, you know, it's an interesting one. I think a few decisions, you know what it's like, lads, in international rugby, it's fine margins. I think around the breakdown, sometimes the lad's not rolling away, CJ Stander getting in over the ball. Then he ended up getting yellow carded and penalised himself. So, yeah, I think it was just a really good test match. Both teams were on the edge, and you're going to win some, you're going to lose some of those decisions. I thought the referee played a pretty good part in making it a contestable match. So, yeah, for me, I think Alan Wynne-Jones is maybe looking for something there, maybe to help him out a little bit in the next match against France.
So what you're saying is you're giving Roman Poit man of the match, yeah? I knew you would. Stevie, thanks for taking this call, mate.
Thanks, Stevie.
Keep lifting those weights, yeah?
Yeah, mate. Yeah, you know me. I'll be in the gym first thing tomorrow morning.
Keep going. You look great. Stay strong, all right? Good luck.
Cheers, Flats. Cheers, lads. Thanks, Shanks.
Lovely that from Big Stevie. I call him Stevie because everyone does, but I don't know if I know him that well. Stephen.
Now, there's Big Jim Hamilton, but I think it has to be Big Stephen Ferris.
Look, Jim Hamilton's just tall, mate. He's just got long limbs. He was born with long femurs.
He's like a praying mantis, isn't he?
Yeah, but I mean, if the wind could blow him over, a hard stare would knock him over, Jim, because he's only 37 kilos now and he's 6'12".
Well, I tell you what, a bit of the wind is taken off the top of his head.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple of photos I've been sent to me by Tom Marsh of Jim at the airport.
Oh, is there a Jim at the airport?
No, of Jim Hamilton at the airport.
Oh, sorry.
And the little biscuit is appearing.
Is it?
Yeah, it needs a bit of shoe polish on that.
Luckily, he's 6'13", so no one ever sees it.
Yeah.
But Stephen Ferris was, I'll try and say this gently because he won't be listening to this, but you play against some people in your career. I've said this before, before I knew him, but there's some people you play against and you think rugby must be really easy for him.
Yeah.
Because actually he is bigger and stronger than everyone else. We played against Ulster once and he was so dominant. Andy Beattie tackled him, big number six, tackled him off the side of a ruck and he shot putted him. And no one ever did that to the big beast.
Just natural strength, isn't he?
But then he was really annoying. He played so well that Danny Grewcock stamped on his arm, broke it and got a red card. But
which you don't condone?
I do not condone that. He didn't mean to break his arm, but I think he did mean to tread on him.
Now, Wales took a very strong team to Ireland on form as well after beating Italy. Nick Tompkins was starting after his cameo performance. Dan Biggar in a fine bit of form. Tomos Williamson, great performances last week against Italy. So it was a strong Welsh team coming to Ireland. But Ireland looked good right from the start. They had the majority of the possession in the first half, nearly 60%, and found a lot of yards in the wide channels, which is quite strange, really, for Wales, because Wales are a blitzing team. And when you blitz from wide out, it's often quite hard to get into those wide channels. But they became very tight. And often you have to become tight because you blitz on slow ball. But Ireland were getting a lot of go forward with some of the big carries, some real powerful carries. And I think not just the tries, they outscored Wales 4-2, but the power that I think the Irish forwards possess was greater than Wales. You know, especially in those tight areas, especially the pick and goes, the runners off nine. They're able to get themselves on the front foot. And that just created a bit of space out wide. And Conway had a lot of room out wide. I thought Robbie Henshaw coming back in to the starting 15 because
really
Gary Ringrose was out, was just bulldozing players. You know, Tompkins had a couple of attempts at him. He just bounced him back, went forward, got Ireland on the gain line. And then the Jordan Lama try was really, really well taken by Jordan Lama. No doubt about that.
I thought a bit soft though.
This is my point now.
Oh, sorry.
It was a little bit soft. Nick Tompkins decides to go for the ball, doesn't go for the man, misses the rip. But then, right, he's missed him. Lama steps inside. But as a good scrum half would do, cover across, following the ball. Tomos Williams then just falls off the tackle and Lama goes over. You know, so often, you know, with systems, when you miss a tackle in the front line, you're going to get nailed by your 15 or your 9 at covering.
Jimmy nailed, yeah.
But what an offload from Alan Wynne-Jones.
Yep, he's close to our team of the week, isn't he? He's close to it. We'll see if he gets in it in a minute. But
yeah, we're not going to teach. But it was sensible play there by Dan Biggar as well, because it's so easy to throw that ball out the back. Alan Wynne was running more often or not a decoy line, but you have to sometimes hit those decoy lines to hold defenders. He does, he gets himself through, and great inside ball to Tomos Williams. But look, Wales struggled, I think, with, you look at the tries that Ireland scored, most of them from Wales mistakes. Tomos Williams gets a ball off the line out from Alan Wynne-Jones on his own 5 metre line, drops it, and Ireland ended up scoring from that. George North trying to run the ball out from Wales' own half, loses the ball in contact, and Ireland end up scoring. So a few uncharacteristic mistakes, I think, from Wales, which allowed Ireland into the game. And as I said, I think Ireland looked far more powerful in the carries. But you can see Wales are trying to play a little bit different. There's far more offloads in the game, which Wayne Pivac and Stephen Jones are trying to bring in. But set piece, I thought, with Wales wasn't the greatest. But it's a new coach. You know, it's a new management team that's come around. It's going to take a little bit of time. It's not going to happen straight away. If it happens straight away, like Warren Gatland did in 2008, you need a little bit of luck.
People always say it's not going to happen overnight. I wonder what people think sometimes happens at night.
Yeah.
Well, actually, if you're Lance Armstrong, quite a lot happened at night during the Tour de France in your hotel room, didn't it? A key point in the game, I think it was when Hadley Parks got over and had his try disallowed.
And that's a key moment of the game, okay, because that brings Wales right back into it with 26 minutes to go.
Because that would have been converted. It would have been 19-14.
Yeah, a lot of people are torn, really, on whether that was a try or not. All you need is downward pressure.
Yeah.
You see him give him, you see him disallowed.
I only saw it in slow-mo in a TV in the media room at Murrayfield. I saw all the replays on telly and I was like, nope.
Initially, I thought yes.
I really wanted it to be because I thought he played really well, Hadley Parks, and I wanted it to be close. But
I think it was the correct decision. Another one was the Josh van der
Fleer
try, because you couldn't see a clear grounding of the ball. But then, you know, a little bit of common sense has to come into it. You know, he goes to ground, momentum takes it over.
Yeah,
you can't see the grounding, but you've got to reward positive rugby. If you've played the game and you've been in those positions before, you know it's a try. And I think it was the correct decision.
But after the Hadley Parks one, I was going to say, there's a scrum and it's a big one. Mm. And the decision goes against Dinah Lewis, and Alan Wynne-Jones takes exception to that and asks for an explanation. And after the game, as we know, he said he felt a few key decisions didn't go their way. Perhaps he means that, perhaps he doesn't. But he disagreed with that decision. But for me, you know, watching that on the telly with a couple of replays as an ex-prop, that is an absolute no-brainer. I mean, 100% penalty.
Talking
about
props, you know, I thought one of the main differences was Kieran Healy and Tadhg Furlong, their carries.
Tadhg Furlong, wow, he's back to form. His try, though, you and I watched it, didn't we, together, and you said he shouldn't be scoring that.
No, I don't think they should. Not at this level.
No.
I think, you know, there's three defenders there to stop him. It's just down to, I think it was down to poor tackle technique. Not getting yourself in the right body position, because you can't be taking soak-up tackles there. You can't be using their momentum to sort of bring you back and tackle a man because you're so close to the line. You have to be just as aggressive as the carrier. And I just don't think Wales were. And for me, he scored that try a little bit too easy.
Underhill, potentially Curry, Warburton, Lydiot.
Oh, look,
they would stop that.
There's loads of players would stop that. I think he just mentally maybe switched off a little bit. But on the other side, it was a great carry as well. It was
really good carry.
So powerful.
And he looks back to something like his best, Tadhg Furlong. Even when he wasn't at his best, he was still one of the best props in the world. I just love watching him.
Yeah, and I love the niggle between Peter Omani and Alan Wynne-Jones.
Great, isn't it?
Happened all game.
Great, isn't it?
Yeah, it was.
And the way Tadhg Furlong and the forward celebrated that scrum decision, I was like, yeah, this is proper job. They're bang up for it.
Yeah, you can't have too many reasons to be disappointed if you're Welsh. Yes, you're disappointed to lose, but if we're brutally honest, the better team won on the day.
Let's be brutally honest, Tom.
They outscored Wales 4-2. They took their chances. It was a very, very good Irish performance. A massive step up from last week. They looked good in the wide channels. I think Andrew Conway had the most complete game I've seen from him and from a winger. Everything he did, all the instances he was involved in was just brilliant. Very close to running for man of the match, if not, probably should have got it. There's a few big performances. He was good. As I said, Henshaw was good. CJ Stander, I think, ends up winning it. Interesting fact that I'm not sure about today's game, actually, France, Italy, but all the other man of the matches have been back rowers.
So far, yeah, breakdown's key, isn't it? Here's one for you. Don't think I've watched many test matches where more people are bickering with the ref, talking to the ref, demanding explanations, putting their point across, however you want to call it. New levels, mate. It's new levels, boy. I hate it.
This is what when I went on a tangent earlier about the way you chat to referees, and sometimes you're talking about no, referees are biased. They're not. But you can have a better rapport with referees. And I certainly think that subconsciously does help.
Days seem to be gone where you put 10 phases, things are going brilliantly, 10 phases, bang, 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 quick offence, penalty Wales, and Mike Teague and Dean Richards stand up, don't look at the ref and walk straight back. Those days are gone and we're probably never going to get back there again. Referees now, every time they give a decision, they shout and tell you what it's for. I think it's reasonable to say, what happened there, mate?
Yep.
Or what was that? What happened there, Barnsley? What happened there, Nige? What happened there, Roman? And say, okay, mate, and can you just keep an eye out for that? Yeah, sure, that's fine. It's difficult to draw the line between that and actually badgering a ref or trying to referee the game yourself. I really, really, and I used to do it when I played, shouted stuff, no, this, no, whatever it was. I want to see people marched quick. I want to see it out because it gives such a crappy example to kids.
Did you see Jonathan Sexton after the Thomas Williams try?
Yeah.
Kept badgering Roman Poit about it being a forward pass from Alan Wynne-Jones.
It was close, that pass, mind.
It was close, but you know, when a referee's made up his mind, he's made up his mind. It's like when a referee shows a yellow or a red card. No matter what you say, isn't going to change his mind. He's already given it. So
maybe he thinks he's going to influence the next 50-50. I don't know, but I personally think it's actually because he's so angry, so frustrated that he can't help himself but say it. I think it's got more to do with that than anything strategic looking medium.
But it'd be like, you know, Jonathan Sexton and Dan Biggar, I think, are very similar in the way they communicate with referees, with players. You can see the frustration that comes out of them when things don't go their way. You know, they show their emotions. But, you know, you possibly wouldn't make Dan Biggar captain because of that reason, because he's always having to go at refs. You need someone with potentially a cool, calm head, like Alan Wynne-Jones, you know, like the great captains that we've seen, that can actually have a good rapport with refs, because a 10 has so much to think about. He's in charge of the game. He's in charge of the calls. You know, he's in charge of how you want to play the game. So massive, massive amount of pressure, but still a great performance by Johnny Sexton.
It was good. And he did play really, really well. And thanks again, Stephen Ferris, for his time. You can watch the highlights of all this weekend's matches via the ITV Hub. Now, very quickly, Tommy, because this is dragging on a bit, fella. Mm. I don't know about you, but I'm starving. Haven't eaten for 40 minutes now. France against Italy. I'll be honest, wasn't terribly excited because I don't get terribly excited about watching Italy. But
well, you weren't at the start.
They did some good stuff.
You weren't at the start. You were close to putting a tweet out there to say that you can't get excited when Italy play.
But as Shank said, if in doubt, leave it out. Don't put it out. It just, I was like, do you know what? I almost feel like tweeting just for fun to say I just can't get excited about watching Italy. I can't. They actually did some really good stuff.
I mean, yeah, look, the score was 35-22. I think that actually really reflects the game. I thought Italy were far better this week. Lots of mistakes last week against Wales. We didn't see that as much. Look good in the wide channels. Italy have to play a wide game when you've got two tens. You've got Tommaso Allan at 10 and you've got Carlo Canna at 12. You know, both play 10. So, you know, you're not going to
play. Canna play 10.
You're not going to play a tight 10-man game when you've got, you know, two tens on the field. And a lot of their strengths in the backs are the back three, who thought were fantastic.
Yeah, I thought a really good.
Jaden Hayward, what he lacks, I suppose, in flat out right speed, makes up for in his step and his skill game and his passing game. I really thought
Pellegrini was mega. Minozzi, tons of tackles. Minozzi was great. Yeah,
really good. Kept the ball alive. Some great offloads.
Dean Butler, I thought, was class in the second row. They played well
defensively. I thought Italy were really good. Some really aggressive hits, but you know, France full of confidence at the moment. Wasn't the greatest game. Went flat in periods, but there were still some quality performances. I thought Dupont again looked really good. Lovely pass for Aldrich's try.
He is levels, that guy. He's absolute levels. And then Baptiste Serran comes on, scores a try of the tournament.
Yeah,
off the bench.
I know.
Shoof.
How good was that?
I've forgotten the guy's name. The guy who threw the amazing reverse pass in the European Cup, Iberitan or something. Anyway, he's still not playing.
Mm.
Serran comes off the bench, does that. What a try. Dupont, what a player. He's magic.
Class try from Entomac as well.
Yeah.
Really, really well worked how France created that space. And you've got strike runners like Telly Toma. And you know, when you see him lurking behind, you think, right, there's a runner. He's going to be the strike runner that's going to be put through the hole. But he becomes a distributor and ends up putting Entomac through. So really well worked try. But some colossal performances from the French again. In their carries, in their attack.
I thought Villemsa in the second row was really good. But they fell apart. They lost it again in the second half. And I'm so bored of it. I want to, and if, I was thinking, if you're captain, if you're Charlotte Olivon and you're thinking, right, new age, new era, let's do this. Play against England, dominant, nearly lost it, but got away with it. Good on us. And they start letting it go against Italy again because they've basically won the game.
Yeah, but that's...
How do you reverse it?
But that's like saying, Flats, that unless anyone puts 60 points on Italy, you're not going to be happy. When you're automatically going to switch off a little bit because the game's easier, because you've essentially won it already.
France were terrible for 20, 25 minutes that second half. They were terrible. And it's like, they just were a completely different team.
I think it'd be a bit harsh saying terrible there. They went quiet. The game went flat, it did in Cardiff last week as well, for large periods of the game. It was only the last two tries against Italy, which actually flattered the Welsh team to 42 points to nil. But it sometimes goes quiet in games when you're playing teams like Italy because...
Yeah, I just thought the French discipline went away. Their structure went away. They started being a bit willy-nilly about how they counter-attacked. They weren't safe. Their exits weren't safe. They seemed to take too many risks in their own third and they just got loose. And terrible maybe is a bit harsh, but I just think when you know how good they can be, and Baptiste Serran scores that amazing try, otherwise that's 28-22, fella.
Do you know what you are? Perfectionist. That's your problem.
I can't help it. Look at me.
I think they miss Vakatawa in the centre.
Jeez, yeah.
Yeah.
Mind you, World 15 would miss him if he twisted his ankle.
Yeah, you know, when you're 5 metres out, those angles and lines he hits and the strike runners and the ability to step and power through tackles, you know, best in the world. So you've got to be fairly happy if you're in a French camp, aren't you? Two from two at home. They travel away in 2 weeks' time to Wales.
Durs your dur.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, they'll batter them, yeah.
Yeah.
I actually don't think they will. Now, before we get onto this week's team of the round, Tomos, some feedback for you mainly on last week's selections. If I got into trouble about picking Curry for my team of the decade, I look back at that and I think Eddie Jones admitted he would have changed selection if he could go back. I don't quite know how I didn't put Sam Warburton in that team, but maybe I unconsciously did it for a bit of fun.
No, you talked about it. We talked about him, but you said, no, I'm having an 11-year-old in 2010.
Yeah, I was definitely right. But your decision to include Ratez at the expense of Johnny May has rightly raised a few eyebrows. Simon Lane, Johnny May, triple question mark. Spillane Durango, hell of a name. Can't buy that with no Johnny May.
Can I defend myself here? How can a player just let another player run through when the whistle hasn't blown? That is why Johnny May wasn't in my team. If he plays to the whistle, actually tries to attempt to tackle Ratez, then he'd be in. But he just lets him run through, and that's why he didn't make my team of the week.
Dave Sampson tweeted in and said, Ireland played terribly and you picked three of them. Wales win 42-0 and you pick four. Dave, we want to be respectful to our listeners and people who take the time to comment. But mate, have a word with yourself. That's a joke of a tweet. they're playing against Italy, who weren't very good on the day. So they won by loads. And you can play well. You can still play well. We will pick players from a losing team this week. We pick players from losing teams.
Don't tell them yet.
Dave, have a word with yourself, mate. It's about individual performances, okay? Okay. Have a think.
Snoresbin lad wants me to pick Boutier just for the kick. There's more to a game than an 80-metre kick. Look, he was a good bounce. I thought Halfpenny had a very good game. And loads of people asking why you picked Olivion at 8.
Yeah, I know. And actually, I'm quite happy with Olivion at 8. But I meant...
What did I say, Olivion?
Olivion.
Sorry, Olivon.
Olivia. Pick Olivia. Olivion. I actually meant to pick Aldrip. And the truth is, I hadn't had very much sleep.
So you've... Okay, so that's two times you messed up. One was Curry.
No, Curry wasn't the mess up. Olivion was Olivon. Once.
So we'll run through the team of this round, shall we?
Go on then.
Do you want me to go first again?
Do you watch... Who's the boxing from Eddie Hearn? Do you watch Eddie Hearn out of context on Twitter?
Of course I
do. Go on then.
Of course I do. Right, you go first. You go first today.
Okay, here's a team for you to disagree with. Right, for our producer who puts this out onto Twitter with the image, Cyril Bai is at loose head prop. That is number one. Left to right, 1-2-3, lefty-loosey, righty-tighty. Cyril Bai, I thought, had a really good game for France. Marchand, a hooker, again for France. Yes, they went to sleep a bit, but he was off mainly by then. Thought he had a really good game. Easy selection at 3, Tadhg Furlong.
Mm-hmm.
Alan Wynne-Jones, he's not a lazy selection because I thought the Irish lads played very nicely, but Alan Wynne, I thought, had a particularly good game. Dean Budd for Italy, thought he carried excellently. Really, really productive. He threw a wild pass in the last quarter, but apart from that, I thought he contributed as much as anyone else on the field. The back row, this ain't easy, fella.
No.
Underhill, Terminator, play 7.
Man of the match.
Yep. And I'm picking 2 number 8s, okay? So don't at me, okay, about that. CJ Stander is in. The turnover king. Was he man of the match again?
Believe so.
I think you're right, actually, yeah. And Aldrit, Buzz Aldrit, I call him. French 8. I don't think he had as good a game as last week.
Who's playing 6? Who's playing 8?
I don't know.
Stander 6.
Stander 6.
Okay.
All right, outstander.
I'll have that.
Outstandering.
I'm going from 9. I've got DuPont again in at 9.
Easy.
Yeah. Is there a better scrum half than him in the situation at the moment?
In the history of sport?
No, because John Cooney's not going to start.
Yeah.
Thomas Rees is quite quiet. I've gone Johnny Sexton at 10.
Not Ntamack, who dropped that ball, didn't he?
Ntamack dropped that ball, but I just think his whole game management, yeah, he played in the right positions, territory.
Sexton at
10, yeah.
Also, stronger opposition, it does count. A good performance against stronger opposition helps.
I've gone Hadley Parks at 12.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. One kick that went out on the full in the first half, but really just gives Wales great platform, really good defensively as well. He's my 12. Unlucky not to score that try. My 13 is Robbie Henshaw. His defence carrying ability, he was up for it on Saturday. That was evident.
He was
super strong, ball
he
in
was
hand.
Bangers.
Minozzi on one wing.
Okay.
Did you see every time he got the ball, stepping inside, keeping it alive, offloading? I thought
he caused Boku the problemo, didn't he?
I think he's a better winger than he is 15.
Agreed.
I think the balance of Hayward at 15 for Italy and Minozzi on the wing. Really good game. Really impressed with him.
Okay.
I've gone Conway on the other wing.
Conway, good.
I think had the complete performance of a winger against Wales. And Jordan Lama at 15.
He's wearing a suit of armour. It's Jordan. Okay, that's a good team.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you've made a couple of glaring mistakes there you have it.
You keep picking people out of position. So.
No, but I like that. I don't mind that.
You turn into a guy that likes controversy, mate.
Nah, do what I want. I'm like Eddie Jones, mate.
You used to turn your back and crawl into a ball.
Tom Curry's at tight head, mate. So personally, I'd have had Ntamack at scrum half, but there you go. There you have it. That's our team of the week. We'll pop that up on Twitter for you to get stuck into at ITV Rugby, at David Flatman, and at Tom Shanklin. Can't wait to hear your thoughts, really. We really, really can't. And you'll agree that Shanks has had an absolute shocker with that one. Before we go, time for some of your jokes. We're asking you to leave us a little gag on iTunes when you review us. We'll read out the best and worst of them each week, and you can obviously head to iTunes to read the ones that have already been posted and the rude ones.
And when you are posting a joke, make sure you leave 5 stars, okay? Because that's how you support us, okay?
Yeah, exactly. That's how you make Shanks feel good on a Tuesday morning. JB, how does Moses make his coffee? He brews it.
I was on the beach holding a jar of salsa in my hand. I walked into the water, and a bloke said to me, "What are you doing?" I told him I was taking a dip in the sea.
This is from Yum Bum. Bear walks into a bar and says, "I'll have 2 pints of lager and a packet of crisps." "Sure," says the barman, "but why the big pause?"
Heard that so many times. O'Higgy says, "A recent survey revealed that 6 out of 7 dwarfs aren't happy."
Andy Max, "Why did the baker have brown hands?"
"Don't know."
"Because he needed a poo."
O'Higgy's gone twice. He is keen. You've got to love whiteboards. They're remarkable. I've got Diarchy here. I went to the doctor last week and he told me I was a hypochondriac. "Not that as well," I said.
Right, that's enough. That's enough. You've got more.
That is it.
That is all from us. The players are taking a rest next week, but no matter. Gareth Anscombe is among those joining us to take stock.
We hope. You always got to leave it out, mate. Just in case something happens.
Oh, I've got training.
Subject to contract.
I've got training. Oh, I've got physio.
Subject to availability. We'll be joined by Gareth Anscombe.
Also, I mean, this is private information, but he's gone hard on fees, hasn't he? And he's gone hard on a rider. He needs a car. No, we'll come to your training ground. No, I need a car, he said. I need a car.
He's gone hard on upper body as well.
Has he?
Yeah. Bad knee, you see. Knee reconstruction.
He hasn't really asked for anything. He's among those joining us to take stock on the state of play in the 2020 Guinness Six Nations. Until then, toodle pip.
Ciao.
Bonadar. What does Bonadar mean?
Good morning.
Oh, see ya.